with expectations for a deal non-existent in those four-party talks in Geneva on the Ukraine crisis, the negotiators actually managed yesterday to produce an agreement. The mission? De-escalation of the standoff between Russia and Ukraine. It's a start.
I don't think we can be sure of anything at this point. I think there is the possibility, the prospect, that diplomacy may de-escalate the situation, and we may be able to move towards what has always been our goal, which is let the Ukrainians make their own decisions about their own lives.
It's President Obama reacting to the deal yesterday. We reached out to former National Security Advisor to President Jimmy Carter, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who's now an advisor to the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He says this de-escalation deal is one thing, but the ultimate goal has to be finding a special status for Ukraine that recognizes its unique proximity to and entanglement with Russian geography and history.
It seems to indicate at least some limited accommodation on the most immediate practical issues. As far as I can tell, as of now, it doesn't address the larger issue of the long-term relationship of Ukraine to Europe, to Russia, whether it's possible to have some sort of an understanding between East and West, and of course involving Ukraine itself, regarding some sort of a somewhat special status for Ukraine, which I have been advocating, something modeled on Finland. But in any case, it is a hopeful signal that at least on the practical and immediate level, some sort of an understanding is being reached regarding the conduct of some of the affected people.
We'll talk about the Finland model that you've proposed in just a moment, but Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, in his statements, has suggested that all illegal military formations must be dissolved. That's his understanding of this framework. Who decides what is an illegal military formation, and would that include military groups that Russia may have sent across the border, if there are any?
Well, I would certainly assume so, and you're absolutely right and very perceptive in making that point. I would think the guys in these masks on their faces should certainly be included. Now, of course, I understand the Russians have been concerned about some of the more right-wing elements in the Maidan coalition. And obviously, I think Lavrov has them foremost in mind. But I have to assume that the Russian equivalents are very much included also.
Let's look long term here. You suggested that some sort of model is going to have to be developed for a Ukraine that is not in NATO, but is also not annexed or carved up by Russia. You suggested Finland. I'm wondering, though, in the case of Finland, this is a country that's much more homogenous than Ukraine. It has a robust tech economy, whereas Ukraine is really a multi-ethnic population that has had movable borders over the last 100 years. The groups within Ukraine have always been competitive. And economically speaking, you know, there is no, self-sustaining economic engine inside Ukraine. It's really much more desperate than Finland is.
It is much more desperate than Finland, but it's a desperation created by mismanagement of what potentially are major assets. Ukraine could be easily a breadbasket for Europe. And in fact, the Chinese are showing interest in having it as a breadbasket for China. It has an industry on which the Russians are relying quite a bit, and that makes it productive, and they get paid for it. It has a good labor force, a really hard-working labor force. It just has been totally mismanaged by its recent leadership, which was really a kleptomaniac leadership in which the people at the top enriched themselves beyond any level of decency or competitive rivalries. It's a scandal, but it can be corrected. But the Ukrainians will have to tighten their belts and work hard if they want to be independent. Nothing comes free in this world, and independence has to be earned. It's not a gift.
Annexation is also not free. The Russians will pay a significant bill in Crimea to raise salaries and to subsidize industries that will no longer be subsidized by the Ukrainians. Can they afford to do that in eastern Ukraine with the industrial resources in Donetsk?
Well, I don't envisage the Russians keeping the eastern part of Ukraine as part of an agreement. I see no reason why Ukraine should be partitioned. And it's a little bit of a sort of myth that the Ukrainians are multinational. First of all, they're Ukrainian, though some speak Ukrainian, others speak Russian. There is a Russian minority in Ukraine, but by the way, there is an even larger minority of Ukrainians living in Russia. Should they have a special status? Don't let the Russians pose as great promoters of ethnic and linguistic autonomy unless they practice it themselves. An international arrangement that endures has to recognize certain symmetries of responsibilities and obligations.
Finally, let's go back to 1979 in the Carter administration, the reaction by the U.S. to the invasion of Afghanistan. It was pretty much a series of sanctions and, of course, the boycott of the Moscow Olympics. Would you do anything beyond that in confronting Vladimir Putin here? You've had some strong criticism for some U.S. measures to confront and react to what's going on in Ukraine.
Well, we certainly haven't done as much as we did then. In all fairness, we had greater flexibility then. But gradually, I think we probably will be moving towards more sanctions and more direct aid for Ukraine if this issue is not resolved somewhat along the lines that I have been advocating, which seems to me to be a formula for a reasonable and workable compromise. And much depends on that regard on Putin, whether he is a rational player or whether he's acting emotionally, impetuously. There is some suspicion that that was the case with Crimea, and perhaps it created an excessive dose of self-confidence and sort of victory complex. But I think, as you've just very rightly pointed out, Putin and certainly his associates, and particularly the new business class, are realizing that if Russia slides into a prolonged conflict with the West, economically, it certainly is not ready to sustain it. Absolutely not.
Zbigniew Brzezinski, thanks so much.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
Zbigniew Brzezinski served as National Security Advisor to President Carter. He's now an advisor to the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.